صباح الخير. عناوين اليوم: قريبا أمازون في مصر، أبل تخطط لإضافة خاصية تعرف عبر الوجه إلى أجهزة ماك، وأرباح تسلا تتجاوز المليار دولار لأول مرة. يا أهلا وسهلا فيكم ببرنامجكم صباحكم مع سماشي، معي أنا هالة، ومعنا بخلف الكواليس علي.
صباح الخير.
كيفنا اليوم علي؟
اليوم ماشيين نص الأسبوع.
نص الأسبوع. صباح الخير لكل الناس اللي عم تتابعنا. صباح الخير محمد، وين ما كنتوا عم تتابعونا بخلف الكواليس على الإنستغرام لايف أو على موقع أو تطبيق سماشي. خلونا نبدأ بأخبارنا لليوم. أول خبر معنا عن شركة أمازون وعملاقة التكنولوجيا والتجارة الإلكترونية، أعلنت عن الموعد الرسمي لإطلاق موقعها الإلكتروني في مصر، ويمكن لكافة رواد الأعمال وأيضا الشركات المحلية المصرية تسجيل رغبتهم بالانضمام لعالم أمازون بدءا من يوم أمس. ويمكن أيضا للشركات المصرية التعامل مع مركز أمازون لشركاء البيع، وهي الأداة اللي بتتعامل مع البائعين وتختص أيضا بمتابعة العمل معهم. وكانت أمازون مسبقا تتعامل مع عملائها في مصر طبعا من خلال موقع سوق.com، هو إحدى الشركات التابعة لأمازون. الآن سينضم لها المزيد من العملاء الجدد، ويمكن أيضا للبائعين القدامى على سوق.com الوصول إلى حساباتهم من خلال أمازون سيلر، واللي هي طبعا لتجربة الميزات الجديدة، وبيتعرفوا على الموقع الجديد اللي رح يتعاملوا من خلاله مع الراغبين في شراء منتجاتهم من كل أنحاء الجمهورية. وأكد أيضا عمر الصاحي اللي هو المدير العام لأمازون في مصر في بيان للشركة أنه إطلاق موقع أمازون مصر الإلكتروني يعتبر خطوة على الطريق الصحيح لتحقيق أهداف أمازون الرامية إلى التعاون مع الشركات المصرية تحديدا المحلية، سواء كانت طبعا الصغيرة المتوسطة أو حتى الشركات العملاقة، وبالتالي توفير المزيد من فرص العمل في مصر، توسيع دائرة العملاء، وأيضا كسب المزيد منهم إلى صفوف أمازون اللي تقدر بالملايين. طبعا تتواجد أمازون في مصر منذ عام 2017، ولكن من خلال سوق.com فقط، ولديها 15 محطة توصيل موزعة في جميع المحافظات المصرية، ويعمل لديها أكثر من 3000 موظف مرشح للزيادة طبعا بعد افتتاح الموقع الرسمي لها في مصر. مثل ما عم نشوف، هذا الخبر رائع جدا لمصر، تحديدا لفئة ريادة الأعمال اللي حابين فعلا أنه كمان يكونوا لهم علاقة بالتجارة الإلكترونية، وأيضا المستخدمين في مصر. خلينا ننتقل لتاني خبر معنا لليوم، وهو خبر أيضا تكنولوجي، وتحديدا لمحبي شركة أبل. الآن قال موقع ماك رومرز أنه شركة أبل عم بتخطط لإضافة خاصية التعرف على الوجه، طبعا المعروفة باسم Face ID، إلى أجهزة حواسيب ماك اللي بتنتجها الشركة. نحن مثل ما متعودين أنه Face ID موجود على التليفون، الواحد لما بيمسك التليفون الخاص فيه أو الآيفون تحديدا بيتعرف من خلال الوجه، ولكن هذا الشيء راح يصير على أجهزة الماك من خلال العامين المقبلين. ونقل الموقع أيضا هذه الأنباء عن الصحفي المعروف مارك جيرمان في شبكة بلومبرغ، واللي أعرب عن اعتقاده بأنه أبل تهدف إلى إضافة خاصية التعرف على الوجه إلى جميع منتجاتها، بما في ذلك هواتف آيفون الأساسية غير الرائدة مثل مثلا SE، وكذلك آيباد إير، واللي بتدعم خاصية التعرف باللمس فقط، ولكن راح تصير بالفيس آي دي أيضا. وقال أيضا أنه خاصية اللمس ستبقى جزء مهم من منتجات أبل، خصوصا بالنسبة للموديلات الأساسية، وذلك لأنها بديل غير مكلف عن خاصية الفيس آي دي، مع استمرار أيضا تقديم الحماية الأمنية للمستخدمين. وأيضا قال في الماضي جيرمان أنه أبل كانت عم بتخطط لإضافة خاصية التعرف على الوجه إلى أجهزة ماك، تحديدا الـ 24 بوصة اللي غيرت تصميمه وأطلقته مؤخرا، ولكن أجلت هذه الخطوة الآن إلى جهاز ماك القادم اللي رح يشهد تغييرا في التصميم أيضا. وخلافا لأجهزة آيفون وآيباد حتى، تمتاز شاشات اللابتوب ماك بأنها أرق بكثير جدا، مما رح يصعب من إدخال مستشعرات العمق اللازمة فيها من أجل دعم خاصية خاصيه التعرف على الوجه مثل ما اشار هو، ولكن خاصيه انا برايي جدا رائعه بتسهل الموضوع كثير. يمكن حتى خاصيه اللمس رائعه على اجهزه الماك، فما بالكم اذا فعلا صارت تتعرف على الوجه وبصير في الموضوع حمايه اكثر. طبعا عندنا علي من اكثر المحبين لابل، فمستحيل ما نساله عن رايه بهذا الخبر. علي، من دون يعني تحيز، خبرنا شو رايك؟
مستانس عن فيس اي دي، على يعني حق الدقيقه او الثواني اللي انا يعني استعملهم عشان احط الباسورد
راحت
خلاص. يعني اقدر استغل الفرصه ان خلاص ادش على اللابتوب وادش على الاي ماك على السريع
تماما.
فشيء يعني I'm looking forward. يعني
دائما بيشتغلوا أبل على الكونفينينس وقديه سهولة بالله التعامل مع منتجاتهم يعني. وأيضا هي نوع من أنواع الحماية، ما فينا ننسى هذا الجانب أيضا. بس تخيل عن جد أنه الماك تبعك قديه رح يغير الموضوع أنك تصير تفتحه من خلال الفيس آي دي.
بس أنا أول ما أقعد على 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 الكرسي خلاص سيده
تماما. ولكن اذا حدا ممكن ايضا بده يستخدمه غيرك، فممكن من خلال الباسورد اللي انت بتعطيه، فايضا العمليه يعني لسه سهله للجميع. خلونا ننتقل لاخر خبر معنا لليوم عن شركه تسلا. سجلت تسلا 1.14 مليار دولار ارباح من خلال الربع الثاني من عام 2021، وهي المره الاولى اللي بتتجاوز فيها المليار دولار، طبعا بنسبه نمو تعد ب 1000% مقارنة بنفس الفترة من خلال العام الماضي. وجاءت ربحية السهم 1.45 دولار مقابل توقعات ب 98 سنت للسهم المعدل المتوقع، وبلغت إيرادات الشركة 11.96 مليار دولار مقابل 11.30 تقريبا مليار دولار إيرادات كانت متوقعة، ولكن بلغ إجمالي مبيعات السيارات 10.21 مليار دولار وجاء هامش الربح الإجمالي للسيارات بنسبة 28.4%. وأبلغت تسلا بالفعل عن تسليم نحو 201 ألف تقريبا سيارة كهربائية وإنتاج 206 ألف مركبة خلال الربع المنتهي في 30 يونيو 2021. كما أعلنت أيضا عن إيرادات ما 100 تقريبا مليون دولار من أعمال لها في مجال الطاقة، بما في ذلك طبعا الطاقة الشمسية للمنازل للشركات والتخزين للمرافق، بزيادة تزيد عن 60% مقارنة بالعام الماضي. طبعا في ناس كتير بتتوقع بعد هذا الخبر انه يرتفع سهم تسلا بشكل كبير، ولكن مو ضروري انه مع اخبار ارتفاع الايرادات دايما ترتفع الاسهم، لسبب انه كان متوقع انه اسهم ايرادات تسلا ترتفع بهذا الشكل وتوصل لهذا الرقم. لذلك شفنا ارتفاع بأسهم تسلا، ولكن بسهم تسلا، ولكن مو هذاك الارتفاع الكبير جدا. هذه كانت كل أخبارنا لليوم. بعد الفاصل خليكم معنا مقابلتنا مع رائد الأعمال زهيب علي في الحديث عن آخر استثمار حصلوا عليه. خليكم معنا ولا تروحوا لبعيد. ورجعنا لكم من جديد ومعنا ضيفنا لليوم زهيب علي، الشريك المؤسس لشركة دستيجر. هاي زهيب، how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you? Thank you very much for having me on this.
Thank you for being with us. We would like to know first, like a brief about the company and introduction, what services you guys provide.
Yeah, so Dustigir is a B2B marketplace that connects small retailers with manufacturers and suppliers throughout Pakistan's two largest cities, which is Lahore and Karachi. And how does it work is, you know, every retailer, over 35,000 retailers on our platform, use our application to order anything in their store. So imagine us as the Amazon for store owners, whereby they can click, order, and get on-demand delivery with embedded finance.
Interesting. And recently you've got a funding of $3.5 million. Congrats on that. Can you tell us more about this round?
Yep. Thank you very much. We began our seed round back in December, and then we're quick to raise our initial commitment for the seed round, and then quite recently closed with all of the legal documents. Quite excited to have new partners join us in this journey, specifically Asian Development Bank Ventures. That's their first investment in Pakistan. Edgebrew Partners. That's their first investment in Pakistan. And so now we're seeing a lot of interest in Pakistan, in this region, by a lot of some quality investors, we would term them, as now probably this is the hottest region or country in this region right now.
Nice. And what are the plans of the investment?
Yeah, so the funds were basically raised for expansion into one, financial embeddedness, and two, you know, expanding our core marketplace, which includes, you know, both the marketplace, logistics, generally to serve retailers faster, better, and with more SKUs, right? So we're currently leading with more than 2,000 SKUs on our platform. And that's where, you know, on average, if you happen to visit a local Kiriana store, as we call it, you would expect roughly 4,000 SKUs in their shop. So currently, you know, we're just halfway there, keeping in mind the average, and there's a long way to go. And that's where the funds will primarily be used for going deeper into the wallet share of our retailers, as well as providing them with financial embeddedness, such as buy now, pay later.
Nice. And any plans like to go more than Pakistan, geographically speaking?
So that's an interesting question. We do not have a very clear point of view on that as of right now. But interestingly, we do have four different cities that we've earmarked. Again, we're closely watching the market. I do not believe that it is the right time for us to expand internationally, maybe by Q3, Q4 of 2022. But we're doing our preliminary homework just to make sure that, you know, whatever experiments we need to run in that new market, whatever analysis we have to do, whatever homework we have to do, we're on top of that to make an informed decision. Generally, we are of the opinion that whatever we're building can be easily deployed in any other emerging economy. And nice. That's where, you know, where supply chains are mostly fragmented, and we're adding the most value and creating impact in the lives of these retailers. And so what we're building is a playbook that can easily be replicated into any other emerging economy. So to begin with, we're always strong wherever you're based at your home. And once you kind of get hold of that playbook, you can easily deploy that in other regions, in other countries. And that's where we're currently, you know, making some moves on making our playbook more finesse, so that, you know, it's much more efficient when we scale up internationally.
And Zuhaib, the startup scene in Pakistan is booming recently. So can you tell us more about the ecosystem and the startup scene in Pakistan?
Yeah, so let me take you back to 2019. I was coming back to Pakistan from London, and that's where the new government was coming in. And that's where a handful of good people started this company called Airlift, which went on to raise, you know, Pakistan's largest Series A round. And I believe that's the turning point in Pakistan, whereby Airlift pioneered the way for new investors to come in and watch this market closely. We were building a decentralized mass transit system back then at Airlift, and that's where, you know, we were able to attract major investments from First Round Capital, Quiet Capital, Sharuk Partners, mm-hmm. You know, and then that's where everything just changed. From then, COVID came in. We saw a lot of new startups raise more money. I think what has literally changed the game is Kareem's involvement in building this ecosystem, right? So every time you see a new startup, it's either a founder that's coming back to Pakistan, yeah, or two, he's a Kareem alumni, right? And that coupled up with Airlift's massive raise of over 25 million before 2020, before the pandemic, that gave just more confidence because people could see Airlift competing with the big boys, as well as, you know, scaling up, executing really fast. And that's where people realized that, okay, Pakistan is a big country. It has over 240 million in population,
yep,
and over 100 million in 4G connections. And being in this market, you know, you just can't go wrong. It's so, so fragmented in terms of technology that you open up any new thing that's been working in other emerging economies, it's deemed to work in Pakistan. And that's where, you know, quite recently we see Every single month, new investments being raised by new investors, from new investors, by potentially some great founders. And this is how we believe that, you know, this is going to continue. It's a wave that, you know, that's coming in. People can now see Pakistan. And thanks to all of the stakeholders for enabling us founders, you know, to ensure that we're executing fast.
And throughout your journey, like, what is the most challenging part of it in Destigger?
That's interesting. A lot of things keep us up at night. And specifically, if you're building a hyper growth startup, it literally is not easier to execute, right? It's always hard for early stage startups to attract the right talent, whether that be tech or non-tech. That's something that a lot of people we've not seen in our kind of region take that risk, you know, of joining a startup. It's always risky,
yeah.
No matter even if you're a Series D or E company, but early on, it's even more riskier. And so because the phenomena of not knowing how startups operate tends to, you know, keep a lot of good talent away from startups because they feel it's very risky. That's number one. Number two is generally at Destigger, we're building three startups altogether. One is the core marketplace. The other one is logistics. Since logistics is the core element of customer experience. And the third one is, you know, our buy now, pay later scheme, right? So if we see it holistically, we're building three startups exactly. All in one go, which is something very unique. But a lot of companies such as Udaan in India have already proved this to be a great model. Even Alibaba's China's Alibaba is, you know, something that we really admire, how they've built something being frugal and very asset light. When we're building three different verticals altogether, it's very hard to find the right partners, right? So on the logistics side, where we've already had experience in building a decentralized mass transit, you know, what is in our advantage is that, you know, we're leveraging those same players that we were leveraging previously at Airlift to run buses, now to run our logistics. So that has worked really well for us. But ideally, you know, one, talent, and two, you know, having the problems of a scaling organization are entirely different things, right? And not to mention that, you know, we started this when the world was coming to an end. Yeah. People thought we were crazy. And starting a company when you're not even allowed to leave your house and you get beaten up by the police for leaving your house was a whole different challenge. This has only made us more resilient, has tested our perseverance to the limit. But now we're confident that, you know, if we can pull off something right in the midst of a pandemic when the world was coming to an end, we can technically do anything. And that's where we're quite thankful to the early team members that joined in, took a massive risk, and now, you know, we're kind of creating that path to scalability across Pakistan.
But wasn't the logistic part challenging, especially during COVID and, as you said, the restrictions?
Yeah, so interestingly, we've been moving thousands of people from one place to another at mm-hmm. Airlift, right? Moving people is much more complex than moving goods, right? So if I was to be traveling somewhere and if my platform said that I have to be standing at a specific stop, being a human myself, you know, I'd be moving around.
Yeah.
I'd not be mindful of the time. And that's a bus coming, you know, it already has 22 people in it and I'm the 23rd and it won't wait for me, right?
True.
But keeping that learnings in mind, and this is where, you know, a lot of synergies have developed because what we're building is quite similar to what we've already built at Airlift, you know, which is a bus pooling service. So when we were kind of launching, you know, we had already that mindset, that thought process of building the right technology with the right partners to begin with. And the idea was that, you know, hey, if moving people is 10 times harder, this is probably going to be slightly easier
yeah.
than moving people, and moving goods is generally, you know, they can't move. So
yeah.
it's you have to pick them and load them up and unload them. So that's really worked for us. But I think if we did not have that experience of bus pooling, I think it would have been much, much more different, much, much more difficult. And it wouldn't have been an easier journey. But that's one of the reasons why we've been able to scale up super fast in a way less, you know, in about less than 11 months so far.
And that's very interesting. You mentioned the team a couple of times. So can you tell us how do you keep them motivated during those times? And especially you were like just launching the business and everything.
Yeah, this is very interesting. So I'll give you an example. So why does Harvard Business School produce the best candidates for after MBA? You know, why are they placed in some amazing posts in financial industry or investment bank or any other industry, right? And why does INSEAD produce one of the best business students? The one simple trick behind that is to have the cohort that's coming in into that organization has to have a very strong intrinsic motivation, right? So if somebody was applying at Dastagir and we have more than 30 applications a day, it's very hard to get into Dastagir just because the process is so tight, the process is so evaluative that, you know, even if you kind of aced in one of the things, you would not be able to ace in the other if you weren't a complete intrinsically motivated all-rounder, right? That's where, you know, what we've learned that, you know, we've picked and choose every single person on our team. Today, we're over 280 people. Yeah. And that's where a lot of bandwidth of the founders have gone into picking up the right team. If there's one bad fish in the pond, you know, it will kind of put everybody at stake. So that's what we believed in. So that's where, you know, our process of recruitment is so strong that, you know, first you would have to do a case study and you would have to stand out from rest of the average in your case study. So you have to be exceptionally good amongst the top 1% in whatever case studies we receive to just get to the panel interview. And then from the panel interview, we have four people and one has to say a strong yes. And then there's a simulation after that, you know. Wow. So we give them a small budget. They have to go out and execute. And then after that, you know, they're on a three months probation period. And a lot of time people do not make it after the 3 months. But, you know, that's how we get the right candidates in. The two things that we purely focus on in evaluating is, one, does he have the ability to execute at scale? Mm-hmm. And two, is he intrinsically motivated? And one of the best things that has worked for us is check if the candidate is open for an interview at 5 a.m. in the morning. If
Whoa.
He is, that would be that just states that, you know, he really wants to work at this.
Wow. You do interviews at 5 a.m. in the morning.
That's correct. Somewhere between 5 to 6 a.m.
Wow, that's a very interesting point. And how many people would show up for the 5 to 6?
Almost 60% just say that, hey, it's too early for us.
Wow.
That's where we know, okay, if it's too early for them in an interview, what happens when the house is burning?
Yeah.
They'd keep on sleeping, right? So that's where, you know, we respectfully decline. Of course, we don't tell them that this was the reason. But, you know, generally that's some of the ways on how to how to gauge intrinsic motivation. Yeah,
that's very interesting. Thank you so much, Zuhayb. I wish you best of luck in your company, co-founder of Dastagir. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me here and look forward to speaking soon.
For sure. شكرا كتير لكم لمتابعتكم. أنا بشوفكم بكرة بنفس الموعد. نهاركم سعيد جميعاً.